They create jobs for legitimate reasons. Some of them that we've highlighted in the past, the infamous Bridge to Nowhere in Alaska, the Teapot Museum in North Carolina, some of them, you know, are a little extraneous and don't accomplish much. We actually found out about two that are in the pipeline right now. One of them's to study big eye tuna in the Pacific, and the other's to study the growth of cysts on soybeans in the Midwest. Now, you can debate the merits of those all you want, but they do look a little strange to be put into these bills. And now you've got the Tea Partiers kind of leading the charge to ban Republican senators from earmarking anything for 2 years. And that's pitted you know, some of the Tea Party-backed candidates against some of the more establishment Republicans. And it's kind of a fascinating thing to watch on Capitol Hill.
Well, and I know a big change. Senator McConnell, the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, said, okay, we're going to actually at least try this, right?
That's right. And, you know, his weight on this is very significant. As Senate Minority Leader, he as the old bull champion of earmarks, it is really significant that he turned on this. The question is, how many of the establishment Republicans is he going to bring into his fold and get to do this? Some of them are actively resisting it. James Inhofe from Oklahoma is one of the guys who's resisting this pretty mightily. And, you know, their argument is, look, these are legitimate projects. If we don't get these for our home states, you know, jobs could be leaving, some important things like that. But what's interesting also, it's led to some nasty rhetoric from senators and others. You know, what Inhofe said to the Washington Post was, if I don't do this, you know, the money's going to go to the White House to spend as it sees fit. And, quote, President Obama doesn't even know where Oklahoma is. And his point was that he's more attuned to the needs of his state than the president was. I mean, you have to keep it in context. But still, it didn't sound that great. Yeah. We got no response to the White House from that. But it's just one of those things that leads to some pretty dicey and acidic rhetoric on the Hill.
A lot of debate on the Senate side. The House has been more quiet on this, although a lot of Tea Party folks are going to be among the leadership of the House.
That's right. And the House is, you know, they've already, I think, banned it once, and they're about to do it again. They're pretty much, you know, set against doing this. And John Boehner is leading the charge on that. Now he's got a pretty hefty majority coming in.
He has the gavel.
That's right. Yeah. So they'll be able to ban them from the House. Well, the question is, you know, if some bills, you know, get sent to the Senate and then they get put in conference with some pork barrel projects in them, what happens when they get sent back to the House for the conference and how they mesh the two bills together? That could create a real logjam on Capitol Hill that may result in not a lot getting done.
One of the other stories that you've been covering is the so-called merchant of death may now be in custody, right?
He is in custody. It's a fascinating story. His name is Victor Boot. He's a Russian, a former Soviet Air Force officer, who is believed to have racked up millions, if not billions, of dollars from the sale of heavy weapons, planes, you know, even unmanned aerial vehicles to various governments and rebel groups since the early 1990s when the Soviet Union collapsed. This guy is so legendary in the arms trafficking world that he is widely believed to be the inspiration for Nicolas Cage's character in the movie Lord of War. Yeah. He was extradited from Thailand, flown to the U.S. overnight. He's in custody now, facing terrorism charges. And he's just a fascinating character. I mean, we did a lot of research on him and interviewed people who had spoken to him and knew him. You know, the guy's story and what he was able to do over these last, you know, 18 or so years is incredible. His reach extended from Africa to Afghanistan to Latin America, and just about every major conflict that took place, he had a hand in.
And arms getting around the world largely because of this man.
That's right. And, you know, one of the people who wrote a book on him, his name is Douglas Farah, former Washington Post reporter. He wrote a book called Merchant of Death about Victor Boot. He said, basically, if you look at the wars that were directly impacted by his deliveries, you can see that these wars escalate directly in proportion to the amount of weapons arriving. And he, by Farah's estimation, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people suffered because of the weapons that this man was able to deliver. He did business with the likes of Charles Taylor, the alleged warlord from Liberia, for, you know, other kind of despotic leaders around the world. And he's just got a very notorious reputation. So it looks like he may be spending some time in U.S. custody.
And this was a sting operation that he was caught in, right?
It was a sting operation. They I'm not sure exactly who it was who apprehended him, but they were posing as people who were trying to get him to sell arms to the FARC rebels in Colombia.
Wow.
And he apparently bid on that. Now, the Russian government, it should be said, is very, very angry at this. They say the extradition was illegitimate, was illegal. They say he is innocent, so that they're going to try to help him. What Douglas Farrett told me is that they're saying this because he, with his connections to the Russian military and intelligence, he just knows too much about them, and they don't want that to get out. An official at the Russian embassy would not comment on that when I asked him.